Welcome to 321 Go the podcast. I'm John Pelkey.
And I'm Carissa Galloway, and we're bringing you stories from start to finish to keep the everyday athlete motivated to keep moving towards the next finish.
All right, folks, something special for you today. You probably know Carissa was up in Falmouth, Massachusetts, hosting the Falmouth Road Race, and had the opportunity to record a live episode with professional runner and Canadian Olympian, Ben Flanagan. Ben's back from his very first Olympics and shared his experience, what it was like in the village, on the track, even the unfortunate situation of what happens when water meets the infamous Olympic Village cardboard beds. Can't wait to hear that. Thanks to everyone who follows, listens, and supports us. And hey, folks, let's do this.
Hard to tell.
Hard to tell. Yeah. 4 o'clock here at the A6 Falmouth Road Race 2024 edition. My name is Carissa Galloway. I am one of your race hosts, and I am also a podcast host of 321 Go the Podcast. And our goal there is to inspire every athlete to keep moving towards their next finish line, whether they're a professional or an everyday athlete. And we happen to have a professional here that is well known in the Falmouth area. He is called the King of Falmouth, but now we're going to call him an Olympian. He's an NCAA 10K champion out of the University of Michigan. Three-time champ here at the Falmouth Road Race, racing the World Championships last year. The Canadian record holder in the 5K and 10K. Shout it out if you know who it is. It is Ben Flanagan. Give it up for Ben Flanagan. Olympian Ben Flanagan. How does it feel to hear that title?
It feels amazing. You know, it's a whole life's work, really, and a dream from a very young age. Something I thought hopefully I could eventually achieve, but along the way there was a lot of setbacks and times where I didn't think it was ever going to happen. So to come back from Paris now officially with the title and to be, you know, in Falmouth as the first place to come back to is pretty special. So I'm just really excited and very grateful.
Has that sunk in? Because you probably didn't feel like an Olympian until you stepped on the track, the gun went off. Was it hard to rein in the emotions there?
Yeah, I mean, the thing you tell yourself at a race like that is that it's just another race as a way to not build it up. But when you walk into a stadium of 70,000 people cheering loudly for, you know, a bunch of distance guys running a 5K, it's not what you're used to. So it is not just another race. So you really have to just kind of lean into that energy a bit, get excited, get pumped. And, you know, I was sporting Canada, where I'm from, in the Maple Leafs. So my goal was just think about everyone that helped me get there, run for them, give it everything I had, and see what the outcome was on the other side.
Well, we are going to talk about your race, and I was actually there, not for your race, but at the end of the Olympics at Stade de France, and I can say there was an amazing energy in the stadium, and you were in a heat, which I'm sure drew a lot of attention with Jakob Ingebrigtsen in it as well, right after the 1500. But I want to start with your Olympic experience, because I think there's so much that we don't, as everyday humans, see about an Olympic experience. So walk me through, what was it even like getting there, your travel, when did you go, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I was officially selected probably around July 2nd.
So it's different than the U.S.
A little bit different than the U.S. system. So once I officially found out I was going, the first thing was scheduling training camp in San Cugat, Spain, which I left for on July 22nd. So I went from the U.S. where I trained to Spain. I was there for about 10 days. Unfortunately, was there during the opening ceremonies, so I didn't get to attend that. And then on August 3rd, I went over to Paris for my race on August 7th. So Spain was very organized, you know, very structured with Team Canada. Logistics were like taken care of. And then when you walk in the athlete village, it's just like a total free-for-all. So it's all the resources you need are there, but there's just so many high caliber athletes all you know, trying to find a situation that works best for them. You know, you're walking by NBA players and other sports, and I looked around. I was like, I'm definitely the shortest person here out of the whole village. So it was a little overwhelming, but you just try to find your routine, you know, stick to what works for you, and get used to the cardboard beds, and just get ready for your race.
Yeah, I want to ask about the cardboard beds, because we heard a lot about the cardboard beds. Sometimes the media overdoes things, so, you know, I really like the beds, the heavenly beds at a Westin. I'm sure you've stayed at one. How are we comparing, you know, cardboard beds to the Westin bed?
Yeah, I mean, it was no Westin bed, but thankfully I'm a very good sleeper, so I had no trouble. They weren't big, and like I said, for me, that wasn't a problem, but any of those U.S. basketball players or any other basketball players, I would have felt bad for them. The biggest challenge we had in Team Canada provided all rooms with AC units because of the heat, and they weren't provided by the Olympic Committee because they wanted it to be a green games. But one of the athletes, they left the hose in the room, and it flooded the floor, and unfortunately the cardboard bed actually started to, like, disintegrate. So that was the worst problem we had with the cardboard beds, is someone's room just, or their bed collapsed middle of the night because of the water. So yeah, you just kind of got to be ready for anything, something you're not used to at home.
Oh my gosh, I love this. So did you have roommates there in the village, and if so, who were they?
Yeah, so every country has their own kind of apartment complex, which you share with other sports, and then you usually room with people that are in the same sport as you. So our apartment had a total of 8 guys in it, in 4 different rooms. So you are sharing a room that you sleep in with one person, and the apartment with another 7. So I had a 208 marathoner named Rory Linkletter was my roommate. Him and I have roomed together at multiple world championship or other events like that. So we're really good friends, so that was no problem at all. But yeah, you want to make sure you get along with everyone that you're rooming with, because it's tight quarters.
Was anybody messy, or was that you?
No comment.
You know, I want to know all these things. I think about being at home with my husband. All right, the other question I have before we dive into logistics and actually running is the food. We heard a lot about the food, maybe food scarcity. There weren't any eggs. So what did you eat? How was it? How were the lines?
Yeah, definitely another big talking point. I was okay with the food. I don't eat a lot of different types of meat, so I eat a lot of, like, fish. And I got everything I needed, a lot of rice. I kept things pretty simple. So there was nothing that was crazy. I felt like I could avoid things that didn't seem great, and I got the basic stuff. But it wasn't like eating at a Michelin star restaurant or anything like that. I will say every morning they did have a really nice coffee bar set up with all these athletes from the UK just pumping out espressos, Americanos, cortados. And right beside it, they had a little bakery baking fresh baguettes, like, nonstop. So that was probably, like, the hot spot in the athlete village. Everyone would go there in the morning, get a nice fresh baguette, nice cup of coffee, and start their day that way. And that was probably the best place in there.
Was there anything that surprised you about this Olympic experience? I know we're not to the track yet, but was there anything that was surprising to you?
I think I just realized I really just didn't know what to expect once I got into the village. I mean, I was just shocked about some, like, it gave me an appreciation for how hard it is to compete at the games themselves, you know, and the value of, you know, attending multiple games and getting used to that experience. I guess the most surprising thing for me was just some of the athletes' performances were, you know, to actually be able to get to the Olympics well-prepared after qualifying and bring your A game, it's really, really hard. So some of the athletes from Canada and the U.S. that got there, won medals, set Olympic records, it just gives you a whole another level of appreciation for how well-prepared athletes are that really know what they're getting themselves into and can deliver an environment that's, you know, really high stress.
I mean, you bringing that up just talks to, you know, anybody performing in any type of race at whatever level, the mental side of it that is so very important. You can have all the training in the world, but you have to have that mental side locked in. For you, the arrival there, the waiting to run, were there nerves that were coming up? Was it that little voice inside your head saying, I'm at the Olympics? You know, how did you handle that?
Yeah, the nerves probably started about 4 months ago. So, yeah, you really have to just try to normalize the whole experience and really trust what works. I think that's the value of experience, though, as well, is some things, you know, you just can't prepare for. Some things you don't really know what you're going to get yourself into until you go through it the first time. You know, unfortunately, the Olympics is only every 4 years. But I would say walking away from this experience, I learned a lot about, you know, what it really takes to be successful at the Games. And if I'm lucky to get another opportunity in L.A., hopefully I can get there with a much better understanding of what it takes and better preparation to really be my best on the day.
All right, let's talk about your race day. You're in the second heat of the 5,000. Walk me through your, I'm a logistics fan, right? I want to know all the logistics. Ben wakes up in the cardboard, gives it a good knock. Yeah. You know, then how does it work? Warm up, stadium, food, what are we eating? What'd you bring with you? I want all the logistics.
Yeah, so I usually start my day, like if I'm racing in the morning, with a shakeout, probably about 4 hours before. I'll run about 10 minutes. I usually get up at 4 or 5 in the morning to do it before the Falmouth Road Race, for example. And the funny thing is, in the village, you know, everyone's sleeping in, and the only people you see there in that morning shakeout is all the guys you're about to race in like 3 hours. So you're there trying to, like, you know, get pumped, and you're like, oh, racing that guy, racing that guy. Like,
was Jakob, did you see Jakob in this?
I didn't, now that you mentioned, I didn't see Jakob in the village.
Okay.
So he might, I don't know if he was staying in the village or not. I did see Nordas, his teammate, in the 1500 and 5K, Morgan McDonald, some other athletes as well. So started with that and then did my pre-race routine, you know, my baguette, my coffee, got to the track.
How'd you get to the track?
Yeah. So they just got a crazy shuttle system.
Okay.
So they have got a little camp set up where it's like schedule of all the events just in order. And it's like, luckily we had a coach that just, you know, we got sent a spreadsheet every day of like, okay, here's exactly what time to meet and here's what you're going to do for each stage before your race. So that was all mapped out for us. So you take the bus, which is, you know, a little bit like, you know, it feels a little anticlimactic, right? The biggest race of your life. And you're like trying to balance on the bus on the way over there because it's just packed with other athletes.
I had a different vision. I had like a coach bus,
no,
right?
No private jet or anything. You're sitting on a bus. Hopefully you get a seat. And if not, you're standing. And once you get there, short drive. So it's no big deal at all. Once you're in there, the everything's so airtight with security that you do the warm-up around the warm-up track. So again, you're just seeing everyone you're racing against. And then the biggest change is really just the call room. Like once you check in for the race, you're pretty much there for 30 minutes and then you get access to the track minutes before and then the gun goes off. So you really try to do anything to stay warm. You know, you're jumping around in there and just try not to get too anxious. But yeah, it's a little bit disorienting. Like I remember the first couple laps of the race, I like almost forgot like which side was the finish line and which side was the starting line because it was just, there was so much happening. So but yeah, you really just have to understand it's going to be a bit different. Try not to get too nervous, stay calm, and, you know, just trust that once you get out there and the gun goes off, like your body's going to do what it's meant to do.
Talking about nerves, before we get into your race, how nervous do you think your family was watching you? I know you probably didn't watch a lot of the games, but they had heart rate monitors on parents,
yeah,
which I love seeing, and I don't ever want one on me because when my daughter does gymnastics, I'm sure I'm at like 180. How do you think your family dealt with this amazing opportunity and the pressure of the situation?
I would imagine my mom was super nervous. Like she gets really nervous at big events like that. So I was lucky. I had a fan base of probably 20, 30 people there in the stands, which was pretty amazing. So that was super cool. People from Falmouth, people from Canada, all decked out in Canada gear. So I actually was able to see them when I was on the track. But yeah, I imagine they were pretty nervous. And I mean, the cool thing is like the support system I have, like they really only care so much because I care so much. So, it's very unconditional support. So, I'm sure they're very nervous. I never like to stress them out, but, you know, they're only nervous because they know that I want the best out of myself and they're just hoping that I get what I want out of the situation. But, you know, to have family that cares that much is really special.
As a spectator, I enjoyed watching the game, seeing all of the families and all the shirts. And we were actually on the Metro with Grant Fisher's mom
and his
family the night of the 10K. And she spent, my husband can attest to this, 10 minutes of the Metro ride showing us pictures of Grant's race. Like we had seen the race, but the families are so proud. This is such a big deal. And that's, I think, what makes it so exciting that it goes from the athletes to the families, to the cities, to the states, to the countries. And it creates such a positive feel of good sportsmanship and just a desire to watch people perform at the highest level. So let's transition to your race. You probably didn't have the result you wanted, but can we talk about your race and walk us through how it went for you?
Yeah, you never really know how the heats are going to go. You know, the 5K has two rounds, the heats and the finals. My goal was to make the final. That was like step one. And then if I got to the final, we see what happens there. So you never know if it's going to go out fast from the gun. You have to be ready to run a PR, or if it's going to start really slow and you're going to have to basically run an all-out mile at the end. And it ended up being the latter. And it probably got hot with maybe five laps to go is when the pace really started to pick up, and we were running about 4 minute mile pace. And once I got to 600 meters to go, that's where it really started to take a toll on me, and the top contenders really started to separate themselves. And at that stage, you just stay calm, trust that anything can happen. And the heat before, a bunch of guys fell down. So you just are like, okay, I'm still in this, stay calm, give it everything you have. And I was able to, you know, fight to the line, but unfortunately fell short of making that final. But I, you know, looked over the splits and everything afterwards, and you know, it was just hard, and you're against the best guys in the world, and if you're not on an A-plus day, like, you're gonna get beat. So a really humbling and big learning experience for me. Of course I wanted better, but you know, that's what happens when you're against the best guys in the world. You got to really bring it. So it was very inspiring to see what it takes to be successful at that level and learn from it and bring it to future races as well.
Well, we all in this room, all in this community, are extremely proud of you. And I hope that in 4 years, we are sitting here having a conversation that you're looking back and saying, you know, in that moment, it was a little bit disappointing, but I learned X, Y, Z. And that's why, you know, I've continued to grow. And I will shout out my husband's father is Jeff Galloway. If you know him, he's one of the most legendary runners in the world, and he didn't make it out of the prelims in his one Olympic experience. But that doesn't define a human, that doesn't define a career. So it's just a part of your resume, and it's not, you know, not going to be the end of your resume. There's a lot more exciting things for you. But before we talk about Falmouth, I want to talk about one way you celebrated your official Olympian title, and that was with a little ink. So yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I told everyone, you know, if I make the Olympics, I'm going to get a tattoo of the rings, a very, very classic Olympian thing to do. So, you know, I brought up to my wife and was like, okay, if I was to get a tattoo, you know, just I'm going to make the decision, of course. But I wouldn't mind your input. So she gave me some ideas, and we decided to go with, you know, all black rings on the forearm. And I was thinking about coming back and doing it in Boston or in the U.S., but we had everyone there and took a look around some of the tattoo parlors in Paris, and we're like, you know what, it'll be really cool to do this on site here. So we got in there. It was honestly, you know, it was a pretty simple design, so it didn't take very long. And then you walk away and you're like, well, that's there forever, you know, Olympian forever. So yeah, really excited. This is my first time I get to show it off. I'm excited to race in it for the first time. My second tattoo, I got my first one while I was at Michigan for, you know, similar type of reasons, but yeah, just something that like reminds you of just how long you've really been thinking about, like, you know, since I was a kid seeing, you know, Olympic rings on people's bodies as tattoos, being like, wow, that'd be really cool to one day be able to do that. So to have it now is just one of those reminders that, you know, I really accomplished something that I didn't know I was ever gonna be able to do, and that's pretty cool.
I heard that you maybe had a little stress when you first got the tattoo, a little bit of concerns. Is that an accurate statement?
That is very accurate, yeah. So, very, very classic tattoo experience. You know, the moment of, well, as soon as it finished, it's being like, wow, okay, that just happened, and I have a tattoo on my arm that's going to be there forever. So it's very easy to, you know, nitpick, like, okay, like, I wish this was a little bit different, this was a little bit different. But overall, I'm very happy with it. But yeah, I tend to be a little bit of an overthinker, which I usually do a pretty good job keeping to myself, but didn't do a good job that day. So, my family and friends, they definitely noticed that I was a little stressed out, but all good now. I'm over it mostly.
I think it looks really good. What do you guys think?
Thank you. Thank
you. It's going to look really good on the course tomorrow. Is there a moment, not from your Olympics, but from this Olympics, that inspired you, that will stick with you?
From this current
Olympics?
Yeah,
just from watching, from hearing anything.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things. Like, the athlete performances, I think, are probably the most obvious ones. You know, we had a couple Canadians bring home golds in track and field, which
I was there for the 4x1.
Yeah, the 4x1. You know, touchy subject in the U.S., but yeah. And then some throwers. You know, and Canada's hasn't always been known for like a track and field powerhouse. So to see Canadians winning Olympic golds just sets the bar higher for other Canadian Olympians to feel like that's possible. But honestly, the biggest thing is like the amount of support I got from like the announcement all the way to competing and then afterwards was pretty insane. Like being named the team was one thing, you know, the amount of people that actually got up at 5 a.m. to watch me run, you know, and told me that they were doing it. Like, people I haven't heard from in years, people that I don't even know, just hearing from others that their friends are going to watch. And then afterwards, even having a result that I wasn't thrilled about, you know, getting, again, that unconditional support, it was pretty crazy to feel like, you know, I always know I have a lot of support in my career, but to see it that clearly was amazing. So I'm really grateful for that and, you know, inspires you to want to continue to do your best and, you know, appreciate that people enjoy seeing, you know, you chase your dreams and do everything you can and hopefully inspire others along the way.
All right, let's talk Falmouth. You are just coming off the Olympic 5,000 meter. How is your recovery and how do you feel about getting out there racing now as we can introduce you as Olympian Ben Flanagan?
Ready to go. Yeah. So, you know, for a while now, I always said that anytime I could come to Falmouth, I'm going to. I've missed 3 years now, one due to COVID, where they did the virtual event, which I participated in, just didn't win in a competition. So then I was injured 1 year, and then I missed last year due to the World Championships in Budapest. So I knew that it was going to be tight schedule, especially if I made the final, it was going to be a really tight schedule. But I basically knew, like, if I was able to be here, I was going to make it happen. So super excited to be involved in the event, of course. With a track record of 3 runs and 3 wins, the goal is always to just come and win. So yeah, once my heat was over and my pity party was done, it was like, okay, time to get ready, focus again, you know, like I got to compete. This isn't something that I can process and dwell on, like a result that I wasn't happy about. It's like another opportunity is coming and I want to make the most of it. So, I feel good so far. You know, the plane ride traveling west is always easier than traveling east. Did a workout on the course yesterday between miles 1 and 5. And then, you know, a little bit in between. And everything's good. You know, I feel confident that like my track fitness is going to convert really well to the road. So I want to make number 4 happen.
All right. For those people who are going to listen to this that have never been to the Falmouth Road Race, we've got a lot of listeners in the South. Sell us on why people should come back in 2025 and run the Falmouth Road Race.
It is the most beautiful road race course in the world. And I particularly love the painted numbers in the road. That's what got me in my first experience when I was doing the drive. And I was like, oh, did they paint these? They're like, well, no, they're always there. I'm like, what? Painted in the road? So, you know, the town, or like the city, they love the road race. It's a huge part of the event here and the community goes all in on it. So, and you can tell, right? Between the host families, the lead up, the celebrations afterwards, like once you step foot on here and get involved in the expo from when you get dropped off to go to the airport, like you're enjoying every minute of it. So, you know, surf drives hard. It's always going to be hard, but you know, it's worth it. And, taking a dip in the oceans afterwards, amazing. Having a beer, you know, at one of the bars after the race, if you're of age, of course. There's amazing things to do and to be around amazing runners and an amazing community. It's my favorite race that I run every year.
Now, all the people right here might know this, but you kind of have a love story around Falmouth. So can you educate people on that story and what might give you a deeper connection to the race?
Yeah, and the other thing I tell people who have never run before is that if you come to the road race, you might meet your wife, because that's what happened with me. So in 2018, my first year running the road race, I came here to the expo to be picked up by my host family and kind of watched every other elite athlete get picked up, and I was the last one standing. Once we figured out that, you know, something was wrong, we called the host family, and it turns out they had a flat tire, and weren't coming to pick me up. And that ended up being probably one of the best things that could have ever happened in my life, because my now father-in-law decided that they would let me stay with them because his daughter was an athlete at Michigan while I was wearing all of my Michigan gear as well. And ended up winning the road race that year, my first run in 2018. And that was apparently good enough to impress Hannah to a first date. And we went back to school, started dating, got along really well, and just got married in October. So we're almost at 1 year of marriage, but just bought a house on the Cape as well. So yeah, I mean, I got a ton of support my first year here and, you know, just visiting. But now that, you know, we're basically, now we're truly locals, like it's home. And I'm really proud of that. I'm excited to be here all the time. And yeah, I'm just lucky that my potential host family didn't come that day.
I love that story. That's fantastic. And races are great places to meet people. If you're single out there, you know, if you like to run and you find somebody that loves to run, it's a great connection. I'm so grateful that you spent this time with us, knowing that you just came back from Paris and that you're going to run. Our last question that we ask everybody in the podcast is, when you get into a hard place in a run or a workout, what do you do to motivate yourself to keep going?
There's definitely a collection of things. You know, you always want to try to combat the, you know, the more negative thoughts, the stuff that's saying like, oh, I don't know if you can hang, you know, you're slowing down, like maybe it's not it today. I would say the first thing is that everybody experiences that, including me. Some of my best races in the world that I've ever had, you know, I've had to fight like negative thoughts, and you really want to reframe it. One of the strategies I like the best is to really set incremental goals. So it's like, when you're at mile three, like mile seven can look pretty far away. So you start just thinking about just get to number four, you know, get to number five, get to number six. You know, you really want to just break it down into more manageable goals. And it's pretty surprising how, I think people can be surprised how much their body can really push themselves when, you know, you take it one step at a time. So that's the best strategy for me. And then, you know, think about those that are supporting you, you know, and it makes it easier on the road race course where people are physically screaming and yelling and it's loud and it's fun. But try to enjoy that, you know, have fun with it, get excited, think about the people that are there cheering you on, and, you know, think of it as like bigger than yourself. And, you know, that can inspire people as well.
All right, guys, how about a big round of applause for Ben Flanagan, our King of Falmouth Olympian. I think we're going to keep you around a little bit tonight. We got some fun things going on, opening ceremony and Elite Mile. But thank you so much for joining us.
I'll be here.
You guys. And we'll send it back over. Opening ceremony is going to kick off right around 5 o'clock.
Thanks. Perfect. Thanks so much.
Today's the perfect day. Really, every day is the perfect day to shout out to our good friend, Sarah Akers at Runs On Magic. Because if you're going to plan some travel, Carissa, don't do it on your own. Just look at me, folks. You need some help. Sarah's there to help.
She is. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, okay, I want to try Disney Cruise. Which one works for me? Which one works for my family? When are they more affordable? How do I even know where to start? Guess what? Sarah Akers is here for you. Head over to her Instagram, Runs On Magic. She shares specials there. She can answer your questions. She's a Run Disney lover. She's a Swiftie. She's a travel lover. And she will set you up for an amazing Disney cruise. Or it's okay if it's another cruise line. That's fine too. Sarah Akers has got you. So thank you to Sarah Akers, Runs On Magic Travel, for sponsoring and keeping us on the move.